Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Business Growth Podcast brought to you by ANZ, a new series for Australian businesses with me, Rachel Newman. Just like ANZ, I'm passionate about helping Australian businesses grow, and I love hearing stories about business success. I'm looking forward to spending time with some real Australian entrepreneurs, discussing just how to grow a business in a sustainable, long-term way. These podcasts have been inspired by ANZ's work with the Australian Centre for Business Growth at the University of South Australia, and by the amazing entrepreneurs we'll be chatting with in this series. So, a little about me. I'm an advisor and consultant to a variety of startups, and I mentor with the StartMate Accelerator program. I'm also a director on the board of Startup Oz, where we believe that technology and entrepreneurship changes lives for the better. And so we work to influence policy and make Australia the best place in the world to launch and grow a business. But enough about me. Let's talk growth. On today's episode, we're discussing the changing roles of a CEO during business growth with our guest, Edward Stoughton from Stoughton Group. Stoughton Group started out as a family business 30 years ago and has grown into a multi-brand pet food business producing premium raw meat and dried food pet foods with a focus on all-natural, healthy products. Brands include Vets All Natural, Dried and True, and the Healthy Pet Treat Company. The group's healthy pet foods and treats are available at major grocery chains across Australia, with exporting to the US and Asia. Edward is also a recent graduate of the ANZ Business Growth Program and joins us now from the firm's How Long base in country New South Wales. Edward, thanks for joining us and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Rachel. It's great to be on the podcast.
Edward, what does a CEO's day look like for you?
The CEO's day, it's an interesting one, and it certainly changed a lot over my journey in the business. It's evolved from a very hands-on role in covering every conceivable aspect of the business to one that's now much more around leading and guiding and mentoring. So right now, CEO's day for me is a lot of meetings with my management team and keeping everyone on track.
Edward, we hear this a lot with CEOs about how that role evolves over time, and in your case, how it used to be real hands-on, down in the weeds, and then goes to more of a leadership level. Is there any part of the business that, despite, you know, elevating to a higher level, you still love to get dirty and dig your hands deep into?
Absolutely. And that's one of the real challenges is finding that balance of how much autonomy to give to the management team, and as I sort of relinquished some of those tasks that I really enjoyed and was very good at, just with a lot of experience in the business, and being able to find that balance of trust into the team to pick those up is a real challenge. But there are still areas where I make sure that I do keep a finger on the pulse and keep in amongst the team on the floor. I think is a really important aspect of it as well, both from my own to keep that intimate knowledge of what's going on and keep the intuition aspect still burning, but also to keep that physical connection with the team is really important.
We had a previous guest who was the CEO of Go Natural Food Products, and the area that he loved to kind of dive deep into was actually tasting each and every product. I'm guessing that's not part of your everyday role.
Less regularly than every day, but I'm certainly I like to lead by example and make sure that we are still on track.
Great. Edward, tell us a bit about how your business has grown over the last year, say.
It has been a really interesting journey and we've been in a phase of very high growth, and if I broaden it over more than the year, sort of the last 3 years is where we've really seen some very significant change in the business. The business has probably grown probably threefold in the last 4 years, and that's seen some very rapid changes as we've had to, change my role as a leader, change the people and leadership team we have in the business. But it's been very much, from a business perspective, it's been very much a change of investing in the systems and the platforms to accommodate that growth. We in the early days, we probably ran ahead of that back end support side of it. We had growth without really realizing what we needed to do to support that. And so the last 3 years has been a very concerted effort of bringing in the right people, investing in the right IT systems, building the capacity, investing in quality teams and processes there. So that we're on the middle of that journey of platform building, I suppose. And right now we're in the sort of real thick of that. A big push in the last year in particular has been around probably strategic planning and really starting to try and forcibly move away from that organic growth and organic reactivity to try and capture a three-year strategy through the ANZ growth program that we participated in, gave us a lot of direction there, and we've been trying to capitalise and implement that type of process.
Speaking about strategy, is that something that you develop and it's a top-down process? Is that something that you engage your team and have it be a bottoms-up build? How are you approaching strategy in this growth phase of your business?
Ben built a management team. If I go back sort of 3 years ago, it was myself and my father, and we've built out a team now of 10 sort of in the management team of each of the key departments. And as recently as January, we had a two-day offsite up in the country, up at Jingellic, and we spent 2 days working through the 3 year strategy, building out the end goal, working out the measures that we're going to need to identify that we're there, and then what are the strategies we're going to implement over the course of the 3 years that'll see us reach that goal. So it was very much a collaborative approach with each of the skilled managers bringing their perspective from past experience and the understanding of the business. But it is a great team, and we are really able to maintain that family business culture of where the Staunton family sort of see that end direction and where we want to go, and then really getting the buy-in of the management team to help set that direction. We're now sort of in the process of the follow-up strategy meeting. So as recently as yesterday, we had a half day to start drilling into building the measures around those individual strategies and then how we then filter that down with our performance review program and personal development programs to all the staff members that will be aligned to that top-level strategy.
Edward, it sounds like the business has gone through some incredible growth over the last few years, and certainly looking as a whole over the last 30 years. Can you describe some of the changes that are required or what you think are the most important things to do, either as an individual or as a leadership team, as you move through the startup phase, the initial growth phase, the rapid growth phase, and then continuous growth phases?
Yeah, it's a really funny one, Rachel. It was a real, as we participated in the ANZ Business Growth Program, when that slide was presented to us of those different phases and stages of growth, it was a real light bulb moment and a very, I guess, exciting to understand there were such clearly defined stages that fit not just with myself but everyone else in the room, and every other business have a similar sort of pathway that they have to evolve through, and that realization really helped to give some clarity as to now I see why we hit this wall and we had to sort of step back and reassess how we were going to break through, and rather than do it organically now and just fumble our way through, we're able to sort of, I guess, get some vision ahead and see what's coming and be able to plan for the next phase and the next strategic shift that we'll have to make and start actually forward planning the resources that we're going to need for forward planning the level of personnel and just the different culture that we need to implement to have the sort of buy-in from the team or the strategic planning to communicate that. So we did hit a few walls in the early phase, and probably a good personal example is we'd had a great business. It started off as a very, I guess, simple business model. We had one customer. We were making basically one product, and each year we just grew as that customer wanted more, and that was great and easy, and no sales, no marketing, no business cards, no nothing. We just worked with the customer and gave them what they needed. When it started to get sort of more dynamic, and we started to leverage what we were doing to do more and break into new markets and diversify into the finished retail pet foods and the likes, we started to see really fantastic growth opportunities, but couldn't work out how to break through. And we got to a phase where my father and I were sort of discussing, you know, we're stuck. We can't seem to find the right people. We've maxed out ourselves. You know, do we bring in a third party equity partner that can bring management team, that can bring systems and structure to help us break through this phase of growth? We were very fortunate that we then stuck with it basically and recruited an HR manager that we then were able to strategically find the right hires into some of these sort of senior roles, and then got a rhythm of good people attracting good people, and we managed to build a team and they brought with them a lot of experience of having worked through some of these growth challenges and could help plot the chart, I suppose, of what we'd need to implement to take us to the next step. But identifying those different stages of growth and preparing for them, understanding what you need to do to break through, and understanding, I suppose, and budgeting for the resources required to do so is a really critical aspect. It's easy to, when you get to a certain level on a business and you realise that to take the next stage, you've got to either invest in a lot of capacity, invest in high quality senior staff. You've got to invest in IT and infrastructure to take the next leap. You want to be very comfortable and confident that once you do make all that investment, you'll be able to push through up into the next phase of growth, because it's an expensive process and a draining process of energy. But get it right and you've got a platform then to leverage into the future.
Edward, sounds like quite a journey. Any big surprises along the way?
Probably a big surprise was how rapidly we've been able to break into some of these export markets. We'd developed this business very much in isolation from the rest of the world. As I mentioned earlier, we were servicing one single customer with one product, and we just did what we needed to service them. So we hadn't really looked at other opportunities, global opportunities, or where the other, international competitors, what were they were doing or how they were doing it. And it was a bit like the Galapagos Island. We'd evolved to our own unique sort of way of processing. When we finally did broaden our horizons, and it was literally I put a heap of samples in a backpack, jumped on an aeroplane and flew over to America to go and visit a trade show and just walked around talking to people and showing some samples. It was a very eye-opening experience as to how big the global market opportunities are once you take that leap of faith into that export opportunities. And we were able to form some really good partnerships on both our raw material export to the major manufacturers in the US and also our retail side with our finished retail treats and pet food. And we've been caught a couple of times on capacity expansion. We've done some big upgrades that have doubled our capacity, and then within 2 years we're maxed out again and having to sort of take that next step. So I guess that leap of faith to look at some global opportunities and then be prepared to back ourselves in with investment and capacity to fulfill them has been rewarding and a great approach, but certainly we didn't expect to have them come to us so quickly.
Those are the amazing problems to have, right? When you have so much demand that you can't meet it through capacity. And Edward, so many of our listeners who are keen to grow their businesses, especially tap into some of these international export markets, would love to kind of understand what you think are some of the things that made you successful. So, you know, you told that amazing story of just going with some samples in a backpack. But do you think that there are one or two tips that you could share with our listeners that you think contributed to your success in breaking through into these export markets?
I think it's probably the big one is relationships. And understanding your counterparty is the major one. So we had a false start as well in our early days. We had an inquiry come to us, hey, we want to import your products into Japan. We said, great, let's go. We've got an export customer. Let's make this happen. And we put a fair bit of time and effort, and I flew to Japan a couple of times, and we got legal advice to set up the distribution agreement and all the sort of work. And then 6 months in, we realized these guys were tiny and didn't have the network in their local country to actually deliver on their volume targets and all the great work we'd done investing in the distribution agreement. And so it was a lot of time, energy and resources invested into a relationship that was never going to have the scale that we were looking for. Contrary to that, the relationships we built in the USA were very strong and again based on a personal relationship with that counterparty. So I made sure that I visited. They came out and visited our plant and met with us, and we formed more of as much a personal relationship as a business relationship, which has been the sort of foundation of a great partnership. But understanding the counterparty, understanding their capability and their motivation and their drive for it as well, is it in line with what you're trying to achieve is critical, and their capability to deliver. And then having a trust in it, or having a level of a relationship, I suppose, that goes beyond a contract and goes to a level of trust. If you can obtain that, then that goes a very long way. And there are resources out there with Austrade and the likes that will help guide some of those and introduce to potential parties and help do the market research, which I'd encourage people to explore as well. But a big part is really understand, know and invest time in building that relationship is a critical one.
If you want to learn more about how to grow a business, head on over to anz.com/businessgrowth, where you can find the free online business growth program. It provides business leaders with the knowledge and skills needed to grow a business sustainably, including how to choose the right growth strategy and the different responsibilities of a leader during growth. It's a rich resource put together by the ANZ Bank and the Center for Business Growth at the University of South Australia. ANZ has worked with global growth expert Dr. Jana Matthews at the university. It really is a great resource, and you might even find more episodes of this very podcast. So it's definitely worth a visit at anz.com/business growth. You're listening to the Business Growth Podcast by ANZ with me, Rachel Newman, and my guest, Edward Stoughton from the Stoughton Group. Edward, it sounds like there's been this amazing period of growth, right? You speak about going from one customer with one product to now multi-customers around the world. You grew in scale, a senior team across all functions, starting with just you and your dad in a family-owned business. Tell me how you managed the team and culture through this period of rapid growth, and especially as you brought on new senior leaders, how did you continue to keep the company culture intact, or does it evolve naturally?
Yeah, it's there's certainly a conscious aspect to it, and one of the challenges was growing. I suppose growing as a leader myself as we've evolved, and bringing on senior people into the team and having that I guess there was you know times of self doubt, and as you bring on people like am I the right person for this role in this business as we continue to grow, and I'll continue to be realistic about that as we continue to expand as well. But being able to bring on the right people and then having a conscious aspect to that, yeah, there has been a lot of change in our business, and what I've been very proud, I suppose, of our team that we and the original team that have stuck with us through, you know, we've had employees for close to the 30 years of operation that have seen a lot of change over the course of the journey. But really, I suppose sharing the enthusiasm and the possibilities that the growth and the change means to them, getting the buy-in, getting help sharing the vision, I suppose, has been a really key aspect. And one of the challenges we face as we continue to sort of grow and have these expansion plans ahead of us is having that clear stay true to our base. We've done a lot of work creating with our whole staff focus groups with our staff and really defining what are our company values, what makes us unique and defines who we are and what we live by. What is the Stoughton Group culture and values we want to implement, and trying to maintain that family business atmosphere with direct access to the business managers and owners, and having that sort of personal touch, I think, is really important. And we get a lot of people joining us for our culture. We get a lot of people that will come here saying what a relief it is to work for a family business. A high growth family business is exciting, but a family business culture, as opposed to the big faceless organisations where they may have come from. So we're really conscious of trying to make sure we maintain that and not get too distant. I suppose the management team can get too distant from the front line where the actual action happens.
Edward, if you're able to, can you reflect on what it's like working with family on a day-to-day basis?
I've been absolutely thrilled that I've had the chance to do so. I joined my previous career was in the banking world, and I was living in Sydney and living the high life, but got I guess wanted to get back to the actual feeling of creating and building, and as opposed to that sort of banking atmosphere. So I joined, moved back about 10 years ago to join Dad. He was probably around 64 at the time and looking at sort of what's next for the business. So I came along, he got a second wind and became sort of excited to have the sort of next generation joining the business and where we could go. So we've been hugely fortunate in our transition process. I'm immensely grateful for the way that he's been able to, I guess, let go of the baby that he's built and have the confidence in me to sort of take over and take that leadership role and make decisions on the direction of the company, that we've been able to work very well together to each to our strengths, and we complement each other very well. But we're in a really fortunate situation of not having that transition challenges that a lot of family businesses might have. And from my perspective personally, to be able to work with Dad and family is a very lucky situation to have that relationship.
Edward, if you were to start your business growth journey again, what would you change this time around?
I think probably where if I knew the stages of growth and understood that growth model and some of the challenge that we would be facing, I think we would be able to strategically plan a lot more for those. We'd be able to invest in the right systems for the right stage of growth, invest in the right people. We did run ahead of ourselves, and we're still mopping up some of that. We're still running old financial systems that we've significantly outgrown. So there's been some aspects that had we understood some of the implications of that, I'd certainly be looking at pre-investing in the right infrastructure at the right time.
And how do you think the ANZ Business Growth Program prepared you as a leader to support your business growth? Or what are some of the things that you've learned that you definitely think you'll be applying in the near future?
Probably it gave a lot of clarity through the ANZ Business Growth Program on I guess, the different through the different stages of growth, the different responsibilities and requirements of the leader. And that's really helped me sort of define how I should be transitioning my role as the business evolves, and moving from that hands-on in every aspect of the role, where I'm IT, I'm sales, I'm marketing, I'm operations, I'm quality, I'm the whole works, to now working to a more guidance role and strategic planning role with my management team filling those obligations. But it also helped that we took key members of the management team to the business course, the ANZ Business Growth course, and so as a group, we were able to identify my changing roles and what was required, but also their roles are going through the same mini evolution, where the management team I brought on were brought in, were very hands-on, and were in the trenches doing the work. But as we've continued to grow, we've then backfilled and recruited in teams within those teams. And so their roles as leaders of their teams have also had to evolve into a higher sort of guidance and strategic level, and we'll continue to do so. So it's been a really interesting journey as that was sort of highlighted to us as a team, and we've been able to take that away and really sort of understand how we had to evolve personally to cope with the growth challenges.
So we've reflected on those different stages, and you astutely point out that that requires very different leadership skills and very different operational activities. Do you have a personal favorite stage of business growth?
Look, I'm loving the journey and the evolution. I loved the hands-on side of it. I loved getting in creating hands-on, creating new products, trial and error on the floor, working with the team, working out ways to operationally do things better, and being hands-on. But I've equally loved the journey of transitioning and having to build, you know, recruit and build a management team that cohesively work together, that we can now evolve into some strong strategic planning expertise and evolving that culture through the organization and updating and planning for our system. So I've loved the journey and I love the challenge as it continues to evolve, and that's really what I guess excites me is the next challenge ahead as we continue to evolve and each of us personally and the business to what the next level of this leadership journey will be.
If you're serious about growing your business, then talk to an ANZ business banker today about ANZ's one-day business growth seminars. The free seminars are a unique initiative with the Centre for Business Growth at the University of South Australia. The seminars are perfect for business owners looking to grow, but unsure how to progress to the next level. And they're open to both ANZ customers and non-ANZ customers. To find out more, talk to an ANZ business banker or visit anz.com/business-growth. That's anz.com/business-growth. You're back with Rachel Newman and Edward Staughton on the Business Growth Podcast by ANZ. Edward, I want to talk about the balance between planning and being opportunistic. So you mentioned a lot of your early growth happened organically, and right now you're in a phase of being much more strategic and intentional. I know in the program, in the ANZ Business Growth Program, you talk about setting up a business plan and being as thoughtful and methodical as you can. When do you rely on that type of planning and structure, and when does that have to kind of get thrown out the window when there's a huge opportunity to seize?
That's a really interesting one, Rachel, and it's certainly something that we face every day. We did grow organically and jumped at opportunities. We've really to get the buy-in and the structure and direction for the team. We're coming up with strategic plans on some high-level fundamental directions we want to take. But the nice thing and the unique thing that we want to maintain as we grow of being an independent sort of family business is the speed of our decision making is a real competitive advantage. And being able, basically, as a family business, we're risking our own money, so we can make calls that other businesses may have to go through a large due diligence phase and the whole process. So we can be a lot more opportunistic than other bigger businesses may be able to be. And we see that as a real competitive advantage. So we don't want to lose that, and that's a really critical aspect of it. It was an interesting question pre-Christmas. We had all our strategic planning done. Everyone knew where we were sort of going and what we were working on. And then suddenly on a Thursday afternoon, we heard of an opportunity to acquire basically vertical integration business where we could acquire a supply chain for some of our product. That was a really unique opportunity of some unique proteins that we could work and vertically integrate. So that Thursday we heard about it. Dad and I are on the plane that Sunday to fly up to Queensland to see the site. And by Tuesday we'd done the deal. Since that date in November, we've been working through the due diligence and the process behind that acquisition to make that a realization. So that creates a huge new opportunity for the business to vertically integrate, supports a lot of our competitive advantages that we can lean on with our export market opportunities and the diversification of our product base, but in line with our core direction. So we were really fortunate that we're in a position that when we can have our strategic planning and where we're going and have that big picture goal, I suppose, is the key part of it, and have those high-level strategies. And then we can look at opportunities as they present themselves. Are they in line with that big picture goal and those core strategies? And then look at the resources and the capital requirements and the payback and how it integrates in the business. And we can make those decisions very quickly and react to those opportunities as they present themselves. And that I see is a real competitive advantage for our business, to be able to still capture opportunities as they present and not be stuck having to turn things down because they're not in our business plan or our strategic plan. We need to be flexible. We need to keep looking at an evolving feast of how we can leverage our competitive advantages and do things better than anybody else, and ideally in an area where we can outcompete and be unique at what we do.
I think that's great advice, and certainly your story there brings it to life so well. Earlier you talked about how a period of rapid growth kind of happened more on the front end than the back end, meaning you didn't quite have the systems and processes in place to be there in place for some of those opportunities that you were going out often taking advantage of. Do you have any stories that you'd like to share about some blunders or near disasters that almost happened when you're in that period of rapid growth?
Yeah, it's a good, it was a funny one. In the very early stages of the business growth, when we were the first move, I suppose, from a single customer and a single product, we diversified from supplying the frozen raw meats to a major pet food manufacturer, and said, let's value add some of that product with the dried natural treats. And we were fortunate have an opportunity to acquire a business, a good little business that was in administration, and we were able to very rapidly, same situation, we were able to hear about that opportunity and within a week have done the deal to acquire that operation that had distribution through all the supermarkets in Australia. So suddenly within a week of being single customer, single product with no sort of diversification, we were suddenly dealing with all the supermarkets buyers. We had branded product dealing with retail customers, the whole chain. And one of the experiences is we had to turn this plant back on and start manufacturing the dried pet treats under the Aussie Pet Health Treats brand. We had contracts to fill with grocery and with the big supermarkets, they don't like being out of stock on the shelf and it doesn't last long. So we had a window of orders that were open that we had to fill. And there was one evening, again, the infrastructure to back it up, we were scraping the barrel as at 3 a.m. I'm here in Howlong unloading the oven with the product into the bags to go into the back of the ute to drive 3 hours up to Young, where we would unload into the packing facility. Got there at about 9 a.m. They're unloading to pack the product by 11 a.m. to get on the truck to get to the supermarket by 1 p.m. in Sydney to be able to ship into the DC to deliver onto the order. It was an all-in, hands-on effort to whatever it took, basically. There's no such thing as no. You find a way to make it happen. And what was exciting is we did make it happen, and we filled the order, and we kept our position on shelf, and were able to grow the business from there.
That's a great example of just-in-time delivery.
Yeah, exactly.
Edward, what advice would you give to someone maybe a few years behind you, just getting started and looking to grow their business?
I think one of the big lessons I've learned is really understand your market opportunity and understand the potential, understand your competitors, and see if you define that you do actually have a competitive advantage that will let you compete and let you scale, and that is real and justified, then back yourself and plan and find a way to capitalize on that, because those opportunities are there. And when you do define that, then you want to resource it. You want to get the people behind you. You want to really plan for those growth opportunities because they're unique opportunities that can come up, and probably the big aspect that is a real realization to me is, I guess, think big, because the business will only ever grow to the level that you expect it can grow. So if you're thinking, hey, this will be great, we'll get 10% growth next year and I'm really happy with that and we'll keep going, then that's what you'll do and that'll be fantastic and that could suit really well. But if you find that you've got some significant competitive advantages that differentiate you in the market and the customers want what you've got, then thinking big and say, hey, 10%, that's great, but wouldn't it be great if we could double next year? And then what if we could double again the year after that? And if you start thinking the scale, then you've got to think about, okay, so if that was to happen, what do we actually need to put in place? Have we got the right people? Have we got the capacity? Have we got the supply contracts in place? What do we need to do? Because otherwise, if you think 10%, you'll get 10%. But the exciting thing is, if the opportunity is real and you think doubling every year, then if you put the resources in place, then that can happen.
So I'll put that back on you, Edward. What's the big vision for your business?
Look, we've got some really exciting growth plans, particularly into the export side of the market. We're just starting is the way we see it now. We're putting in the infrastructure. We're spending a lot of money to upgrade all our ERP systems. We've got a fairly major expansion plan on site. We're building two new factories in the next 2 years. We're completing acquisitions in our supply chain. And that's exactly what I've come to realise is I feel right now we have a really unique window where we've got some great products. We've got unique access to Australian proteins that the global market wants, and we have the experience and the systems and the people and the infrastructure in place to deliver it. So we're basically rolling the dice. We're doubling down and saying let's back ourselves and really put that strategic plan in place that can see us to continue at this growth rate.
Edward, I want to close with a bit of a personal question. What does success mean for you?
It's always a really interesting question. What thrills me, and this is where my father and I are the same, is being able to realise the opportunities that we see, which is a bit of a dangerous one because it there's kind of no end goal under that model. The thrill of the chase, the thrill of the challenge, and then being able to capitalize on that and see that opportunity captured and become part of the business. So at the moment, we're not chasing an end goal. We're living by the plan to look what again strategically fits with our competitive advantages, and then putting in place what we can do to get there. And while we do that, we evolve the team, and our roles will continue to change in the business as leaders. And it's the journey that excites me the most.
Edward, thank you so much for joining us on the ANZ Business Growth Podcast.
Thank you very much, Rachel. It's been great.
And that was the Business Growth Podcast, brought to you by ANZ. To find out more or to register for the ANZ Business Growth Program, go to our website, anz.com/businessgrowth. That's anz.com/businessgrowth. Thanks for listening.